Okay, today is June 11th, 2014. This is Fidencio Marbella with the Westchester Public Library in Westchester, Illinois. Also present is Sarah Scotius, a reference librarian here at Westchester. Today we will be speaking with Mr. Robert Campbell. Now, Mr. Campbell served in the U.S. Army from February of 1945 through September of 1946.
Right.
And he served in the...
Actually, I think I got out in October.
Okay, close enough.
Somewhere, right?
Close enough for government work. Yeah. And he served with the 218th Quartermaster Corps.
That's what I got put into.
Okay.
I trained infantry.
Okay.
And then, like I say, I had the hernia.
Okay.
Well, when we finished training, the European War was just coming to an end, so they shipped my unit. Went to the Pacific. They went to Okinawa.
Oh, okay.
I'd say, and I had to stay behind because they were going to take care of my hernia.
Hernia.
Okay. And by the time I got out and went to the west coast to be shipped out, they decided they needed somebody up to replace guys that were up in the Aleutian Islands there for 2 years.
Okay.
I was on a secret air base.
Okay.
It was being built. Nobody knew about it.
Okay.
In fact, you looked at a map in those days, the name ain't there.
Wow.
It's called Shemya today.
Okay.
But it's just an air base. It's an island that's 2.5 miles wide and about four and a half miles long.
Okay.
It's fairly flat. And that's why they built the airstrip on it.
And it must have been cold.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That is, you get used to it, though. I mean, it's a different type of cold than what you get around here.
Okay.
Here you get a damn cold. Up there it's a different kind.
Okay.
But we were dressed for it.
Okay.
But it was interesting how it happened that I went from the infantry into the quartermaster.
Yeah. Well, you were lucky.
Well, yeah. Well, I replaced a sergeant up there that was in charge of tree warehouses. And I had a clothing warehouse and all the bedding warehouses for the island. And it was my job to see that how much was in there all the time, in and out. And when the boats came in, we had to get the stuff off the boats, get it back into the warehouses. And I had a crew of nine guys.
Okay.
But the bad thing was, all of us that were up there that replaced these guys that were up there, they were all sergeants, but we didn't get the rating.
Oh, how come?
Well, that's what nobody could figure out. They knew that the war was coming to an end, and they knew the regular army would come in. Mm-hmm. As soon as the war was over, the regular army would move in.
Okay.
Well, we had a captain that came up there from a European campaign. And he couldn't understand why we didn't have our ratings. He says, "Yeah, it should be automatic. You took the guy's job." He says, "You're doing his work."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You should be getting paid for that job." You know, he went to the company commander on the island there and asked him, "How come these guys didn't get their ratings?" He says, "Well," he said, "the regular army's coming up. They'll be going home." So that was it.
So you never got the rating?
Never got the rating. Uh-huh. Well, they gave us a corporal.
Not quite the same as a
sergeant.
That
wasn't the same, but yeah. I mean, we were just, you know, corporal. The other guys were privates that were with us, you know. But outside of that, you know, but I mean, it didn't bother me that much, you know. It's just that he couldn't understand why. He said, you know, when he was overseas, you know, if something happened to a lieutenant, you know, the top sergeant took over the lieutenant, he got paid. He was a lieutenant. He became a lieutenant. He said, I don't understand this. He says, well, you guys are doing no job, and you're not getting paid for it. So, but that's the way it worked out. So
yeah, that's the Army for you.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's what I look at. Yeah. But like I said, the island up there, I mean, it's not a place to live. I mean, you know, I wouldn't want to live there, I'll tell you that. Because there's nothing to do. You know, outside of the work we had to do on the island, Nothing else to do. You just sat around, you know, at night and that. You just sat around and there was nothing to go see, nothing to go. And so it's kind of dull. Not that, you know, and you know, the funny part of it was my uncle was one of the first men drafted in at the beginning of the war. You know, before the war even started, he was one of the first draftees. And by the time his time came up, you know, the war broke out, and he went in. He went in the army. Well, the first place they sent him was to the West Coast, to the San Francisco, the Bay, they control the Bay. Well, then they shipped his unit to the Aleutian Islands to chase the Japs out of the island. Well, the only one their Japs were on was Attu. Well, they cleaned them off of there. Then they took that outfit and split it in half. Half went to the Mitchell Islands. He stayed up there. And I often wondered, because I got shipped though, when I first got there, the boat we were on takes you to Attu. Then you get on a barge and you have to take a barge to the island because big boats can't pull in there in the winter time because the water's too rough. And so only barges can get in. And like I say, that, but I had to go over to Attu while I was there. After the war, they started to find, the government wanted to know how much surplus we had because they were selling everything. And so they shipped me over, you know, had me go over to Attu to count machinery that was laying around up there. And I often wondered, you know, if I'm walking on the same ground my uncle walked on, because you know, he was there at the beginning, you know.
Okay, so he was gone by the time you got to Attu?
Oh, yeah. Well, he came, he had a funny thing happen to him, too. He served, like I say, 2.5 years up there, came back to the States, and the bulge broke out in Germany, and they shipped his unit over to Germany. So he spent the rest of the war. He got out just... shortly before I got out.
Okay.
You know, wow. So actually he put 5.5 years in the Army.
So he served both the Pacific and Europe.
And yeah, he did both of them, yeah.
That's harsh.
Yeah, that is, yeah. But then it was just strange the way it all happened, you know. But I often thought to myself, you know, is there something to that? You know, why was I sent to the Aleutian Islands where he was? So anyway, it's just you know something that's odd.
Yes.
Odd. But I often wondered what happened to half of the guys, if any of the guys that I trained with when they went to Okinawa. Because they got in there at the end, and I would say most of them probably ended up as guys that went to Japan when they first occupied Japan.
The occupation army?
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of them went.
Okay.
But I don't know, like I say, When they got over there, the war was still on in Okinawa. They were still having a problem. So I just wonder, you know, if any of them got shot up or anything, you know. So it was just a strange thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, what happened in the Air Force was the same thing. You know, two guys went in. I didn't go. And they get shot down. And then, like I say, it's just weird, you know, the life that happened. Because I was drafted.
Yes. Yes.
So, that's probably it. You know.
Okay. Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about growing up in Chicago and a little bit about your family?
Oh, yeah. Chicago was. I had a good time in Chicago.
What neighborhood were you from?
I was from around Milwaukee and Western Avenue, in that area.
Okay.
We lived on. When I remember where I was, we lived on Milwaukee Avenue and Oakley, which is right off of Western. And I went to school at grammar school right there. Then I went to Lane Tech High School when I got in high school. And it was a good life though, but I was raised while the Depression was on. See, people didn't have nothing. They were happy, you know what I mean? People, nobody had anything, so who are you gonna greedy about, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and like I say, it was strange. But I enjoyed Chicago, okay.
Did you have any siblings?
Huh?
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Oh, I had two sisters. Okay. Yeah, both of them are gone now. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
One died early. Mm-hmm. And she died from cancer. Mm-hmm. And the other one died when she was about 70. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she was the older one. Okay. I was the in-between.
Okay, you're the middle child.
I was the middle child. Okay.
Can you tell us about your parents?
My parents, my dad was worked for Railway Express. You know, that's what you would call today UPS.
UPS, yeah.
Well, anyway, he worked for them his whole family worked for him. He had six brothers, and they all worked, five of them worked for Railway Express. Okay. You know, they all had, I think between them, before they retired, had over 100 and some years working for that company, you know. Okay. But my dad was pretty strict with me. I mean, I couldn't get out of hand, I'll tell you that. And my sisters were good. Well, when we were younger, there were little differences. But when we got older, and I got older, nobody could say a word against me. Oh, yeah, they'd be all over you. But like I say, it was a strange way to grow up, but it was nice. Like my dad come from a big family, 9, 10 kids.
Okay.
See, there was 6 boys and 4 girls.
Okay.
So, like I say, it was nice though. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we never, like I say, when we lived on Milwaukee Avenue, the family was over every weekend. The whole family.
Okay. Oh.
They all lived in within walking distance of one another, you know. So my grandmother, who lived with my dad, she used to cook. Well, she was a terrific cook in everything, baking and everything. And she used to make stuff that today you would never know what it was. But she was a German woman from, but she made dishes that I never heard of. but they were all good.
But they were good.
She made Hasenpfeffer, that's rabbit stew. And that's only made in the fall of the year. Because rabbits, you can only have rabbits like October, November.
Oh.
Because they think most rabbits are sickly. You know, so the butcher shops would only put them out in those 2 months.
Okay.
You know, and when we used to see that, we always knew she was going to make Hasenpfeffer. But I've never tasted anybody that made Hasenpfeffer like she made it. You know, I mean, it was just delicious. I mean, and when she made it, she made, like I say, she comes from a big family. And when she made it in a big pot. You know, not just a little pot. You know, she went, but the whole family, when they came to the house, would take home.
Wow, there were even leftovers.
Well, that's what I mean. You know, it was that type of a family. You know, and she even when she baked, she didn't just bake one loaf of bread. She made about 10 loaves of bread because she knew somebody was going to come over to the house and they were going to take something home. You know, and that's the way it was. That's the type of a life it was. But like I said, it was interesting. And then. And we finally moved out of that neighborhood, moved a little bit over towards Division and Pulaski Road, in that area, and that's where I lived until I went in the Army, and then when I come out of the Army, I got married. So, well, I finished my schooling first. You know, through the Army. Paid for it all, so. But it was interesting, it's an interesting life I had.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that you had tried to enlist in the Air Force, but they turned you down. Can you explain that?
Well, there was three, there was a bunch of us that lived in that neighborhood, But the three of us thought, you know, it'd be a good idea to enlist in the Air Force, something we want to get into rather than be drafted, you know. And so we went down and you know, and put in the officer. They gave us the physicals, and like I say, they vote went, and I didn't. Now, what's the call for that? You know, what, you know, why did it end up that way, where I was going to end up the way I did?
Yes.
You know, but then when I saw the way they ended up, I figured, well, maybe it was a good thing I didn't go in there. So I don't know. Like I say, it's something that's weird.
Yeah.
You know,
so then you got drafted in early 1945?
Yeah, I went in February of 45.
How did your family react when they found out that you had been drafted?
Well, you know, we didn't, our family didn't, you know, they knew it was eventually, you know, the war didn't end, you're going to be drafted, because I was young enough. My dad and them were all too old, you know.
Okay.
But I ran into guys in the Army that were in their 30s, you know. I ran into one guy there when I was training, 39 years old.
That's pretty old for the Army.
Yeah, and he was drafted. I said, how in the world did they draft a guy 39 years old, unless he didn't care?
Oh.
Yeah, but like I say, it was strange, you know, meeting different people from different parts of the country, in the Army, you know, and you find out how they lived, and you know, it was interesting. You know, I actually enjoyed it when I was in the Army. You know, of course I didn't look forward to getting my head shot off, but I mean, but I went in with the idea that if I have to go, I got to go, and that's it. So
where did you do your basic training? You remember?
In Camp Wallace, Texas.
Okay. So you took the train down from Chicago to Texas?
We got drafted. We went to Fort Sheridan. Okay. There they put you, you know, send you wherever they're going to put you in for training.
Okay.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, you know, when you were drafted, you walked down a line, you know, and they just Army, Navy, Army, Navy. You know, well, mine was an Army, you know. So I didn't know where I was going to end up, you know. So anyway, that's the way it went. A lot of guys, if they saw what they were doing, they'd switch places with guys because they wanted to go in the Navy, you know. But it was weird. I mean, so people can't imagine, you know, how this worked out. But like I say, when I went in, I went to Fort Sheridan. Then it was only there a day or two, and then they shipped us out. We went to Camp Wallace, Texas, and then half of us went in different outfits in Camp Wallace, and I was trained, like I say, in the infantry. We were almost done with training when the bulge broke out in Germany, there, because we had, I think, 15 or 16 weeks of training, and if they would have needed us, they would have pulled us out of there and sent us over, you know, because we had that much time already in. But then they called that off, because I had an incident with the dental. Go to the dentist all the time. They had work done, they would take care of it. Well, I went there this one day, that was when the bulge broke out, and they had a red slip under complete immediately. I sat in a chair from 8 o'clock in the morning till 12:30 in the afternoon. They filled every tooth in my mouth. I had 22 bad teeth that had to be filled.
Okay.
And I had to sit in that chair for all them hours till they finished it. And then I didn't, like I said, then it was called off. But that's, like I said, that's things that happen. I mean, it's strange things, you know, when you go into you know, places like that, you don't know how you're going to end up, you know. You have no idea, you know.
Just very random.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's what I say, yeah. Some made it, some didn't. You know, you hate to hear about those things, but I had a lot of buddies of mine that went, very few of them that got, outside of the two that got shot down, that I knew went into service, got hurt. A couple of them were, one guy flew, I don't know how many times, he flew in the Army, and never got shot down. Like I say, you hear stories from these people, other people that you knew, and you just wondered, why didn't I get that, or why, how come, But I was in that, an age where I just was meeting, I wasn't in the right age to be pulled in early, and I was at the end of it.
Okay.
So, it's a weird life.
Yeah. But it worked out for you.
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. At least I lived through it.
Yes.
I just feel sorry for guys that didn't,
Can you describe what your basic training was like in Texas?
Oh, the sergeants are on you pretty good because they want you to learn. In fact, they'd have guys come there that maybe were wounded over in Europe, and they were sent back, and then they became what they call guys that would teach you.
Oh, a trainer.
Yeah, let you know what it was to be. And we had guys come up there, and they would tell you right out, that they give you a gun, and you make a landing somewhere, you might get shot up, they let you know right out, this one guy, I think he was at the Anzio beachhead in Italy. And he, his barge that he was on got hit, and he had to swim in.
Oh boy!
So, and they tell you about these things and tell you, that here's what's got you. And of course, he said if you're carrying a gun, he said, and you're going in the water, he says you throw the gun away. He says, But that's the way they talk to you, And I had one captain come up there. He fought in the African campaign, and he come up there and he made a speech, about being in combat and that. And then he looked around and he said, " 6 months from now, half of you guys will be dead. I mean, that's the way they talk to you, So pay attention to what these guys are trying to tell you, I mean, that's to get you to your mind.
Pay attention.
But like I say, that's the way it was. And I enjoyed it. The 15-mile hikes, 20-mile hikes up there. But in Texas, they hike mostly at night.
Okay.
And you're going around the circle. If you went straight, you went 20 miles a second, you go into a town, So I used to, a lot of times, and I said, that's Stack out there. I've seen that before. that's the way we used to, kid around with one another, And then he used to stop all the time on long hikes like that. He used to stop, check to see if you got blisters on your shoes, because like I say, the shoes may feel like they fit you right, but you go on along a hike like that, and so part of it will be, we had a kid there, I couldn't believe it. They stopped, and they want to know, if your feet are bothering you, and you got to take your shoes off, and they go, yeah, I'm not kidding you, and they come out and inspect your feet. This one kid had a blister from the back of his toes to his heel, and he wouldn't drop out of the march. Mm-hmm. And that sergeant looked at me. He said, "What are you, nuts?" He said, "Nobody's going to say anything to you." He said, "If it bothered you, drop out." But that's the way. That's the what's it called that they put into you, you know, when you're training.
Oh,
you know.
The esprit de corps.
You don't give in, you know.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that kid.
Wow.
I told him, I even looked at him, I said, don't be afraid. I said, I wouldn't say anything. I said, you know, if you dropped out, so. But that's so, because they, when they went on those trips, they always had an ambulance following the trip. Oh, yeah, all the time. Because like I say, some guys can do it, some guys can't do it. You know, same thing with shooting, throwing grenades. We had guys there that couldn't throw 10 feet, you know. Now, you imagine if you were in an area where you were with this guy and you were a little bit ahead of him and he was going to throw a grenade, he might hit you, you know. Because there's just some people can't throw, they can't hit, they can't do nothing, you know. But this is what you get when you're training. They find out who can do it, who can't do it, you know, and that's it. Like I say, I enjoyed training, the training that they did.
Okay.
But like I say, it's just, I just wondered how I was going to end up. You know, I had no idea that the way I ended up.
So then once the basic training was over, where did the Army send you?
They send you home for 2 weeks.
Okay, you got to leave for
then,
2 weeks.
Yeah, then you go back to where then they ship you from there wherever you're going to go.
Okay, so where did you go after your leave?
Well, I went to the hospital. You know, when I finished training, I went home and you know, had my, what's called, went back, and they put me, like I said, they shipped my outfit to the West Coast, and they shipped me to the hospital.
Okay.
Well, in those days, hernia, today it's not like that. Today, they operate on you, they let you go the next day, you can get up and walk around. In the Army, in those days, they didn't let you do that. You had to stay in bed for 2 weeks without getting on your feet. The bottom of my feet, I could peel the skin off, you know. And the funny part of that was when I had the hernia, they had us lined up in the hallway. There must have been about, I would say 10, 12 of us lined up in the hallway going to be operated on for hernia, you know. And I was the only one that was on the one side, you know. And I said to this sergeant, I said, how come I'm not in that line? He says, you're first. He says, you're the only one that's got one on the left side. What the hell is that? But I just thought it was weird, you know. Here I am, you know, just because I know it's on the left side, I'm over here, you know. I tell you, it's funny. Like I say, funny things like that happen when you're in the service. But it's interesting, though. It's very interesting. I actually think that it would be good for a lot of kids to go into something like that, you know. Even if you don't stay in, but do a certain amount of training, in that type of training where they teach you right from wrong, you know. And
almost every veteran we've spoken with has said the same thing.
Yeah,
everyone should go through some kind of service.
Oh yeah.
For the country.
Well, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, it would teach you that you got to live. And you got to give in to the other guy too, you know. So, I enjoyed it. And like most of the guys I talked to in the Army there, you know, they liked it, you know what I mean? No, not all of us. Well, we all knew the same thing. How are we going to end up, you know? So
once you got out of the hospital, where did you end up?
Well, like I said, you spent so much time in the hospital. Like I said, you couldn't get out of bed for
two weeks.
All right. After 2 weeks, you walk around for 2 weeks. All right. Then they ship you out to do some kind of training, walking around and picking up things. They get you back.
Okay.
The muscle.
Okay.
You know. But that would took another 3-4 weeks, you know. Today they don't even do those things today, you know, but that's the way the Army did things. You know? And then by the time I went overseas, I mean, went to the West Coast, the German war ended. You know, and then I went to the West Coast to try and catch up with my outfit. And then they decided that the war in over there was starting to come to an end. And they shipped me up to the Aleutian Islands, okay. You know, to replace these guys that were up there for 2.5 years.
So did you go by ship or by plane?
Oh, by ship.
Okay, what was that voyage like?
Oh, I went over on a ship that's, I don't know what the hell they called it. But they were made strictly for the Army, you know, for battle conditions and that. Well, that thing creaked like, I thought it was falling apart, really, on that boat. We had guys on that boat going overseas. Now, that's 2,000 miles of out to the end of that chain is 2,000 miles. And we had a lot of guys that didn't even come out of the hole. They wouldn't go up on the deck.
They were seasick?
They were seasick. I mean, they couldn't stand to see the water. You know, none of that ever bothered me. You know, like I said, I went to Attu on a barge, but it was funny. When we got over to Attu and got off the boat, then, like I said, they told us we had to go on a barge to get out to the island. They came over and they said, we have a C-47 going over to the island. It can take about 20 of you guys with, you know. So they went alphabetically, and I was lucky. I went on the boat. I didn't have to take that long barge ride across, you know. Okay. But I did get a barge ride anyway. Exactly. That was when I went to Attu.
Okay.
But that was during the day. I came as close to a whale as anybody will ever get.
How close?
Oh, hell, I could see that thing like it was right off the side of the boat.
Wow, okay.
And the skipper that was skippering the barge, he was a civilian. And he said, you know, he told me, he said, I've been skippering here for years, you know. And while we were going over to Attu, we spotted the school of whales out in the distance, you know. And he looked out there and he says, you see those whales out there? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, and he said, if they stay there, he said, we're going 20 miles out of our way. He says, I'm not going through them. You know, he says, I don't know what they'll do. He says, so I ain't taking no chances, you know. So anyway, they disappeared. So he figured they left, you know. So he kept on his course, you know, and I don't think it was 20 minutes later, this damn thing pulled up right alongside of the barge. And I mean, you could see the eye on it just as plain as, you know, as day. And this skipper that was there, you know, he leaves out a, holy, he says, all the years I've been skippering through here, he said, that's the closest I ever got to a whale. You know, it was just a funny thing that happened there, you know. But he said, you don't know what they're going to do. You know, the damn things are bigger than the barge, mm-hmm. You know. It was just funny the way it happened, you know.
Yeah.
But he told me, he said, today he said, I've been doing this for over 20 years. He says, that's the closest I got to a whale.
It must have been exciting to see
that. Yeah. Well, I don't know how exciting, but for me it was exciting. For him it wasn't. I mean, it scared the hell out of him. I didn't know what, you know, I didn't know what the hell a whale would do if you come close to it, you know. Oh, well.
So what was your first impression when you landed on Shemya? What did you think of the island?
Yeah, well, I got off the plane there, and the first thing we did, we went into the recreation hall they have there. And all they got up there is pool tables and ping pong tables, you know. And the Eskimos up there are the best ping pong players I've ever seen. So I don't know where the hell they learned it. But anyway, and you know, we spent time out. I don't think I was on the island 20 minutes when all of a sudden there was an earthquake. Not a hard one, you know, just enough that like that. And the guys in there, you know, he said, they come all the time. He said, just don't pay no attention to them. He said, because they only last like I say, boom, and that's it, they're over. But up there, it's all over. And say, well, Japan. Japan gets earthquakes, you know. And all them countries up there get earthquakes, you know, along the coastlines. But I guess it was things that happened that... And, you know, and then, of course, you get the guys that'll kid you, you know, this island's only on a pedestal, you know, that it might fall over. <You know? laughs> I mean, you get, it's strange, you know, like I said, when you're in the Army, you hear, they do things just to be funny, you know. But like I said, it was an interesting life, you know. But it helped me. I mean, you know, like I say, I knew how other people have a hard time, like I'm having a hard time, you know. And I look at things like that way. I know better than they are, you know. And if I got more than they got, I ain't stopping them from getting what they want, you know. Yeah, like I said, you know, when they come out of the Army there, like I say, I got married. I worked for a while for Railway Express, and then I got a chance to work on a beer truck in Chicago, and I think I only worked there a year as a helper, and then the distributor put on more trucks, and I became a driver.
So you got your own truck.
And I drove for 32 years. Chicago.
All over Chicago.
Around? Most of it, yeah. Most of it was around Lincoln Park in that area. Then after a while they made it, the brewery made a change in the distributors, and I ended up going to the south side of Chicago. You know, so I was all over Chicago. I had downtown. I did that for about 3 years. And then I went all the way out to 63rd Street and around Halsted and that area out that way, and I had that till I retired, you know. But I spent 25 years ago around Lincoln Park.
Okay.
You know, I knew the owners there. I knew their kids. I saw their kids grow up. You know, like I said, it's a strange, good life.
Yes.
Good life. And working on a beer truck, you get to see everybody and everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's all kinds of people in the taverns, let me tell you.
And they were probably always happy to see you.
Well, that they were always, you know, to make sure you're coming, you know. And Schlitz was a big seller then.
Okay.
You know, it was Schlitz and Bud were like your two top beers. And then when Schlitz had the problem, it wasn't the brewery. It was a funny thing that happened there. Was the brewery opened up a new brewery in Tennessee, in Memphis. But they had breweries all over the country, you know, in California, Texas, Kansas, you know, Brooklyn. Florida, you know, breweries all over the place, you know. Well, when they built the new one down there in Tennessee, the two brothers that used to own Schlitz died within a short time. They both died. And the women, they had no boys, and the women didn't want them, so they put it in the hands of a manager. Well, whoever they put in charge of this brewery down there in Tennessee, they had closed the brewery in Milwaukee because they had a problem there. So they closed that one. So they were getting their beer from Texas and from Kansas. Well, now this guy down there was going to ship the beer up to Chicago because it was closed. Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't age the beer. And that's something the owners would have never allowed. He didn't age it more 90 days. You got a beer should be has to be aged at least 90 days if you want it to be to stay. Well, they didn't. They sent it up in 60 days because they thought it was a hot summer. They thought it was going to, you know, it would go out before it would go bad. You know. They didn't know that these liquor stores, when they buy, they don't just buy enough for a week. They buy sometimes, you know, because they don't know how busy they're going to get. They might have a, you know, and that, so they buy them by the 100 case lots, and they stack it in the back room. Well, now if that beer, if they don't have it, if that beer don't go, it's going to lay back there, you know, and that's what happened. It lay back, and it went dead. Hell, you could take a bottle of beer from that, that and hold it up there and pour it into a glass, you couldn't get ahead, you know, and they got it in the newspaper. And right away, all this was, you know, it ain't that the other breweries had that problem, only that one had the problem. But they didn't write it that way.
Okay.
They write it, Schlitz has got bad beer. And that caused a lot of, you know, that's where they got hurt. Okay. That's where Miller came up.
Okay.
Miller then was nothing, you know. But when Schlitz had the problem, it was a chance for them to get in. Okay. See, like I said, it's a great industry. The beer industry, yeah. Meisterbrau was in Chicago at that time, you know.
Okay.
Well, Miller High Life bought out Meisterbrau, but they only and all because they wanted that label light.
Oh,
L-I-T-E.
Yes. Okay.
See, Meisterbrau had the patent on that nobody else could use that L-I-T-E. See, so Miller bought them out. And they kept them for about a year, and then they got rid of the Meisterbrau and just kept the light.
Okay.
So now, you know.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what I say. It's an interesting industry, you know. Today you get beer everywhere, all kinds. I've heard names I've never heard in my life, you know. So, because like I say, I guess there's a lot of guys who know how to make beer, you know. No, even these big restaurants and that, you know, in Oak Brook and stuff like that, you know, they make their own beer.
Their own, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, years ago they didn't do that. Yeah. You know, so yes, like I say, but that's been my life.
Yeah.
You know,
it's been a good one.
Well, I had a good one. Yeah, that's what I say. You know, like I say, 32 years I put on the beer truck, I never got held up. And I was in some bad neighborhoods.
Yes.
Bad neighborhoods. And I had places where the owners of taverns used to have a gun every 3 feet behind the bar. You know, when you're doing business in places like that, you don't know who's sitting in there, you know, watching you get paid. Because I would carry around sometimes as much as $2,000-$3,000 in my pocket. Mm. You know, you don't know who's sitting, you know, like, watching what this guy's paying you and that, you know. We had a guy there one time, one of the drivers down there, he was in one of the bad neighborhoods. He got paid at this place. The guy paid him in cash, and somebody must have seen him getting it, the money. And he stuck it in his pocket, you know. And when he walked out the door, two guys grabbed him like that. That guy took a razor blade and cut the pocket right out of his pants. Yeah, I kid you. Yeah. That never happened to me, though.
Yeah.
Like I say, but, you know, once they get to know that you're collecting money,
mm-hmm.
Today they don't do that. Today, now, everything's prepaid.
Okay, yeah.
You know.
It's a lot safer that way.
Well, I would say, yeah. But like I say, because I knew whiskey drivers, you know, that drove the whiskey, you know, the liquor trucks, yeah, they used to get held up all the time. Mm-hmm. I've had guys that got locked in their trucks. They'd hold them up and then stick them in the truck and lock it up.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, you know, when people find out you got your handling money, there's going to be somebody that's going to try to make an easy day of it, you know. But like I say, it was an interesting life,
Did you have any very close friends that you developed while in the Army?
In the Army?
Yes.
Well, they're all of them are our friends of yours, I mean, but I really didn't get to know a lot of them. I had one kid from Louisiana. He lived in Shreveport, Louisiana. In fact, me and him went out one night and got a little lit up. But that was at the end of training then. Okay. But I often wonder what happened to him, you know. But the other ones, there was one kid we had from the Chicago area. He got shot. We had an incident that happened when we were in training. At the end of the training, you know, they had time to kill. Our training was over. And this company commander up there got a brainstorm. He's going to have a mock like battle, and you go through these woods, with live ammunition. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But he didn't stop to think, that at night, the platoons, you got one platoon over here, A, B, and C. If this one gets out here, and you're here, and you start shooting, it can ricochet off a tree or something like that. And that's what happened. One of the kids got shot, and it took his lung out, And then they stopped it after the first company went through. They stopped it. I don't know how many guys went in with shrapnel in there, And the guy said, "Who was the idiot that thought of this idea?" These generals that were in charge of these camps were guys that were overseas before the war started, but they were not fighting generals.
Okay.
And they were pulled out of those areas, and the fighting generals were sent in those areas, and they put these guys in charge of the camps. And that, but like I said, strange things like that happen, don't?
Yeah. Before you came in, I pulled off a few pictures that I found of Shemya.
Shemya?
On the computer.
Do these look familiar at all to you, or?
That's
the way it was up there all the time.
The base photo.
Yeah.
Lab. And then.
I have a picture of the island.
Do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it looked like. Now see, there was a boat out here in the middle that was sunk.
Okay.
I don't know if that's showing here, and that looks like it is.
Could be.
Because the main dock was out here. These are over here where the barges come in.
Okay.
But this one here, they could only come in like between June and September. Otherwise, the water's too rough.
Oh, okay.
And that's what happened to this boat that sunk in the middle.
Okay.
It was moored against that dock, and then it got stormy, and it broke loose, and it sunk.
Okay.
But that's what it.
Okay.
That's what it looked like. I got pictures here.
Oh, do you? Okay. Can we see them?
These are. You can get an idea of what the island actually looked like.
Okay.
Yeah. See, my son took a picture of this. That's from Google.
Okay.
That's the satellite.
Oh, then here's the runway?
Okay. Now that runway is over 2 miles long.
Oh, why was it so big? Is it?
Because your bombers were going to use
it.
So that's what it was built for.
Okay.
But when I got up there, all this was built when I got up there, but they didn't have lights to light up a runway.
Okay.
Because we had a couple of accidents happen up there where the planes got fogged in, and the planes couldn't get in, and the only place they would come to was here because of the long runway. Let's see, these are pictures here. This is the way it is most of the time up there. You can get an idea how flat the island is. See?
Wow. It looks very desolate.
There's nothing there.
Yeah, what do you...
I'm not kidding you. It's not a place I want to live. I'll tell you that. See, and here was... This was the crew I had.
Okay.
Yeah. And this is what we had up there, dogs. Because the civilians that were building the runways up there brought these dogs up there. And they left them there. And the damn dogs, you know, they'd have litters and that.
Mm-hmm.
And they just left them up there. Okay. We had something like 5,000 dogs on the island.
Oh.
And they sleep outside. You know, well, that's one of my dogs there. Okay. We had a doghouse outside of ours.
Okay.
But we tried to take the dog inside.
It wouldn't
stay inside. Had to be outside.
They're just so used to being outside all the time.
See, here's a big plane that came in to our island. That was when they brought some big wigs up there to the island. But that's it. That gives you an idea of what the island looked like, you know.
I sat on a
hill and there at midnight and watched the sun go down.
At midnight, okay.
At midnight, because they have times up there. You only have 4 hours of darkness.
Okay.
You know, and then they have it, the other way, the darkness, you may have more darkness than light, but not as much as that, like I say, when they have the daylight. Yeah, because I sat on a hill and watched the sun go down at midnight. Yeah, this was me when I was in.
So was this your barracks in the background?
Yeah, that's it. That's the way we lived. That's what all of it, the whole island, outside of the warehouses. The warehouses were, you know, big square warehouses. They were big.
Okay.
We had a couple of good fires up there.
Okay.
One, I had a B-24 that was up there that went to Alaska. To I don't know what the hell they were doing up there, but I mean they had to go to Alaska to do something. Anyway, on the way back we got fogged in. I mean, you get fogs up there, you can't see 10 feet, you know. And he come back and it was fogged in, and you could hear him flying around the island, you know, up there. You know, because we were outside listening, you know, to all this, and then. He went over to ADAC to try to get in there, and they were fogged in too. So he came back to the island because we had the long runway, and it was flat. All these other islands got mountains. You know, Attu is all mountain. And so he came back, and you hear him flying, and finally I guess he was running short of fuel. So they bailed out. I think there was an 8-man crew. Well, when they were over the island, you know, they bailed out. Well, I still say to today, before that plane hit that warehouse up there, I heard that plane roar like it was trying to take off again, you know. But they said no, there was, you know. But anyway, the guy that was flying that plane was a Colonel Lawton. He flew in the Doolittle raid. On Japan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in the Regular Army. And his wife was on her way up there. He was going to be stationed up there. You know. And she was supposed to be coming up there to the island, you know, to be with him. You know. And here he gets killed.
Oh, so he didn't survive?
Huh?
He didn't survive when...
No, there was only out of that 8-man crew, only 3 hit the island.
Oh.
About 3 of them hit out in the water.
Oh,
and the water is so damn cold up there. If they don't get 5 minutes, you're gone. You know. Well, we had planes up there, fighter planes. We had P-38s. We had P-51s. They used to, when it was nice outside, they would go up and fly and chase each other. You know, because they get their flying time in, and they would skim the water. And sometimes they'd hit an air pocket and go into the water. They couldn't even go out for them. Because by the time they'd be sunk, by the time they got out there, and they'd be dead. You know, they'd be down in there. They can't go down and get them. So it's like I said, those things happened up there that weren't right. You know,
it's a dangerous place.
Yeah. Well, like I said, when that plane hit that warehouse there, that was our huts were on the other side of that thing. But the thing is, when the plane hit the warehouse. If he'd have been over 15 feet, he'd have landed on the runway.
Oh.
you know.
But he had no way of knowing because of the fog.
He couldn't see.
Yeah.
You know, all we could do is just stand there and listen. And of course, when it hit the warehouse, then the fire went up. You know, because it hit the motor pool. You know, so there was a lot of gasoline in there and that. I should say it's a strange place to live. Yeah.
Did the USO ever come up there?
No.
No. Okay.
I don't think they'd stay up there. Because like I say, it's snow, there's more snow on the ground like in that one picture there. That's like that most of the time. Oh. You know, as always. See, Attu, when I went over to Attu, you know, I couldn't believe the way them guys lived. Yeah, I went down a road. There was a mountain of snow because of the mountains. See, the snow can't blow away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it gets, and they have blowers. They don't have plows. They have blowers, blows the snow. And I went down there. There's like a wall of snow like this, and then there was a hole. And back in that back hole is somebody living back in one of those Quonset huts. I thought, holy Jesus, I said, I wouldn't want to be up here. But like I said, I got to go, when I was on Attu, I got to go up on the mountain and look down where they made the landing. And the stuff was still there.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, this is
several years before. It's
yeah,
still this, there.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Now that happened in 44 or 42. I'm up there in 45. This stuff's still down there on the beach where they landed. All the barges, everything, just laying there, they're rusting. But the MPs won't let you go down there. They don't want you hunting for anything because they don't know that there's something down there that might be. It might explode.
Oh, like live ammunition.
Yeah, so they still don't let you go down there. You could go up on the hill and look down at it, okay. But you couldn't go down there to pick up stuff.
So no souvenirs.
No souvenirs. You know, and another thing up there was ivory. There's ivory laying all over the...
Oh, is it from the walruses?
From the walruses around there in that area there. And the Army wouldn't let you ship it home. Well, you could take home a piece, you know, something like that. But I had an incident up there. I had to go pick up a footlocker from a major that was going home, you know. And I went over there to get it, you know. I couldn't pick the thing up. He had it loaded with ivory.
Hey.
He's telling you you can't take it. You can't have it that way. And he's walking away with it, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, up there, ivory's on the beaches, and you can find it all over. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, they got walruses up there and everything. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like I say, it's a strange place to be. It's a strange way to have in a war to be. I mean, them guys that were stationed up on that island there, they must have thought they were, you know, this is hell up here, you know. So. I don't know, did I have a picture of the guys there?
On the truck,
is
yes.
No, not on the truck. I don't know if that's in there or not. It's the guy, they're all sergeants. Maybe not, I don't know. I don't think I stuck it in my pocket. No.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah, but anyway, the guys we replaced were, you know, they're sitting around in a circle. That's what they took a picture of.
Oh, okay.
You know, and they're all, you know, see, everybody that was in that hut where we stayed were in charge of something. Okay. See, I was in charge of the clothing and the bedding warehouses. There was another guy in charge of commissary, another guy that was in charge of the supply. Each guy, we all were sergeants, mm-hmm. You know, and all of us were they're corporals.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the way it was. I mean, but we had the top sergeant, the guy that would have been a master sergeant. And he was up there. Yeah, so, like I say, I just couldn't imagine that anybody would you tell them the story, and it, you know, that you could live like this, you know.
Yeah.
Like I say, this is quite a place. But like I say, you could stand on the hill in certain places here and see water on each side.
Okay. It was that flat.
Oh, yeah, you got the Bering Sea on one side and the Pacific Ocean on the other. Yeah. We had an incident up there one time. The gasoline station that we had was right about a block away from where my warehouse was. And this kid pulled in there. He was an Indian. He was driving the truck. He pulled in there to fill up the tanks. And something happened. A fire. And across the street from it is the fire department. They wouldn't come out. When they saw that damn tanker burning, they wouldn't come out of that. This kid that drove that truck in there, he went into the warehouse and into the
firehouse.
Into the where the gas station was, okay. With the hut they got there, and he comes out with two of these fire extinguishers, and he puts the fire out by himself. he finally got it down to where just the tires were burning. Then the fire department came out. I thought, Jesus. Well, of course, a lot of them were yelling, get away from it, let it go, but he wouldn't do it.
Wow.
And I talked to myself, like I said, we had strange people up there, But it was interesting. I liked it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something I can talk about that amuses me.
You had some great stories.
But like I say, but just what else is to do up there? Think about where you're living and what's going on here.
Okay. Anything?
I seen weird things up there. I had a case. What another time I went for the hospital. We had a little small hospital up there. They asked me to go over there and bring a box. For somebody that got killed up there. It was a civilian. And so they asked me to take the box up there, drive up there and deliver the box. So I said, okay. So I went and I took this kid, one of the kids with me, We went up there and when we got to the place and we asked the guy where the box go. He says, in that room over there. So we carried it, I'm on one end and he's on the other. We get it, walk in the room there. Here they got the body laying out on a slab, and he's all cut open. His head is open, and they're autopsying. And these guys are standing around, they're smoking and talking and having. And this kid that was with me, he was from the South. He saw this. He dropped the box, ran out the door. And he wouldn't eat that night. He couldn't stand. Well, I mean, it's not something to see.
No.
Well, I mean, it bothered me too, but not that much. I mean, but like I say, you never know how people are going to react, But they didn't tell me there was a body in there. I mean, that it was the autopsy room.
Yeah.
Hey. But anyway, these are things that happen that would never happen in your life otherwise,
Quite an experience.
Yeah, it is. It's, everything's an experience, I think. Even guys that have to go over and fight their fighting the holes and all that, where somebody's shooting at you constantly, That can't be any fun, I'll tell you that. And like I say, if I had to go, I would have went.
Yes.
It wouldn't have bothered me.
But things worked out.
Well, that's what I say. It wouldn't have bothered me if I had to go. I had to go because, like I said, these guys that used to come up there used to tell you the way it was. They didn't even hold back on anything. They'd tell you right out. Like the one guy told me up there, he says, you ain't going to stand there and bray another guy up there. He said, if you got a bullet in your gun. he said, when they say hand-to-hand combat, he said, there ain't very much of that up there, he says. Because he says, if you get a bullet, you're going to shoot. Oh, well.
Anything else you'd like to share with us today?
No, that's about it. Okay. Like I say, there ain't much you can show about the island, like I say, outside of the runways. All we ever did up there when we had time, we played baseball up on the runways. And I was with the basketball team up there.
Were you? Okay.
Yeah. We were supposed to go over to Alaska and play some guys that were on Alaska. And, we had an incident. There was an earthquake or something off the coast of Hawaii where something in the ocean collapsed, and it caused a tidal wave.
Okay.
And the tidal wave was pretty high. And they were afraid that it would wash half the island away, because it was headed up that way, And they were starting to move everything up to the highest point on the island, And they were kind of worried because they couldn't get the men off of there. There was no boats there to take you off, not enough planes there to take you off. So, a lot of guys could have got hurt, But we were lucky it died down, before it hit. The only one that got a little bit of it, I think, was Dutch Harbor. Got a little bit of it, but they were actually afraid that it was going to hit the island. Mm-hmm.
There's nowhere else to go.
So well, that was it. Yeah. Where are you going to go? They couldn't get you off of there because, like I said, there was too many men up there. Not only men, there was women up there. There was women, the nurses that were up there. Those were officers' quarters up there. You don't go near where the women are.
They were saved for the officers.
No, that was officers' territory. You didn't go near that. Well, like I say, it was a different way of living. Yeah. Different way of living.
Okay.
But like I say, the experience of being in the Army and that's a good experience. Taught you what's right and what's wrong. You got it easy, you're going to have it easy one time, you're going to have it a hard time another time. You live with it.
Yeah, and it all works out in the end.
You got to live with it. My dad used to always say that, No matter what happens, he said, no matter how bad it gets, he says, eventually it'll even itself out. and I think he was right.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your memories with us today. Thank you.
I just thought, I didn't know what you wanted to hear or anything like that. But
you had some great stories. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.